Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of the IAA Mobility Visionary Club. My name is Tim, head of IAA Communication Marketing, and I'm stepping in for our main host, Sarah, today, who will be joining us from the next episode onwards. We are thrilled to have none other than Wayne Griffiths, the CEO of SEAT and Cupra, as today's featured guest. Since taking over on October 1st, 2020, Wayne has been a transformative force in the automotive industry, guiding Cupra to become one of the fast-growing car brands in Europe. In just 6 years, Cupra has sold over 750,000 units and continues to push boundaries as it expands globally. Wayne's journey from his early days in his family dealership to key leadership roles within the Volkswagen Group is nothing short of inspiring. His career, spanning significant positions at Audi and SEAT SA, highlights his exceptional vision and deep understanding of the automotive world. This episode is a raw opportunity to hear directly from one of the most forward-thinking leaders in the industry. Wayne's story is not only about success, but about vision, bold decisions, and redefining what's possible in the automotive world. His insights will undoubtedly spark inspiration, whether you're in the industry professional or simply passionate about innovation. And first of all, hello, Wayne. Nice to have you on the show.
Tim, great to be here. I'm in my office in Matorral here in Seville. Not a very sunny day here in Spain, but great to be on your show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you. Wayne, the first question, the automotive industry has witnessed various rebranding and repositioning efforts with mixed results. What sets Cupra apart, and could you share the secret sauce to your success?
Yeah, there are several factors, I think, what's made the story really, really special. First of all, it's not a rebranding or, trying to take something old and just giving it a different name. We're not trying to substitute SEAT with a new brand Cupra. What we're trying to do with Cupra is create a totally new brand for a new generation of customers out there. And there are several reasons why I think we've been able to get where we are a lot faster than a lot of the other newcomer brands. One of those is, I think we really had no alternative. For us, it was sink or swim. With SEAT, where we were and where the business was going, and with the necessary investments in electrification of the transformation, with the leverage of SEAT, we were never going to be profitable. So it was either do something new or you're going to go out of business sooner or later. So we had to be brave enough to go our own way, do something totally new, which is very motivating for a team when they know it's all about survival. The other thing, I think it was the right time. In the disruption, you could see as a risk or as a challenge or as an opportunity. And in disruption, there are some that come out as winners and a lot that end up on the way losing. So the disruption was allowing a lot of new brands to emerge. The disruption to electrification, and you know a lot of those new brands, whether they're from Asia or from the US, or new automotive brands emerging in the middle of this huge disruption of the automotive industry as we change from combustion engines to electric. But I think there was also a bigger disruption going on, and this disruption is in the values of the younger people out there and the way they see brands. And a lot of the younger generation are not interested in history, luxury, prestige, premium. They're looking for different values, more emotional, contemporary values, sustainable values. And I think with Cupra, we've managed to hit that nerve of the next generation. So that was another important factor, the right time. And then the third factor, for me, I think, is because we hit the ground running. We were part of the Volkswagen Group, so we had factories, we have great technological platforms, we have huge scale, we have our dealer network established, we have an after-sales service network in place. So a lot of the things the other new brands were struggling with, we didn't struggle with because we already had, being part of the Volkswagen Group, so we hit the ground running. And then at the end of the day, the secret sauce, if you want to know what the secret sauce for me would always be the people, because it's the people who make the brand. And I was lucky enough to have around me back then with Luca Di Meo, who's now running Renault, people around me that were inspiring and bold enough to come up with great new ideas. And I think those people, particularly in the early days, made the big difference in making this big dream that we all had come true.
Sounds like a really open-minded philosophy. So Cupra has notable for fostering strong corporate culture and community initiatives like The Tribe or One of Us concepts. How have these efforts contributed to the company's recent positive developments?
Yeah, as I said, the secret to our success is the people who make the brand, and that's our Cupra tribe. I think that's what makes us different. It's what makes us stand out amongst many of the other brands out there. Why do we stand out? I think because we're authentic. We walk the talk. So we don't say we're a cool brand and then we're not cool or kind of thing. So we the way we communicate, the way we act, the things we do are in line with what our brand is about. A brand from Barcelona that we're very proud about, inspiring the world from Barcelona, a brand that's about design and performance. And I think that this authentic way that when people come here and see us, not only our cars, not only how the brand is presented, how we talk, how we behave, this coherency, if you like, I think this coherency is achieved by this tribe. The only thing that can hold things together are people at the end of the day who live and share the same culture. And I think that's what we do here in a very authentic and coherent way. And I think that makes us stand out.
That's really true. And I like the way of thinking about people first. That's a really cool way of thinking. So you just mentioned electrification in the way of disruption. While Cupra leads the electrification wave in Spain, the country is trailing behind other European countries in terms of EV adoption. What key factors do you believe are necessary to accelerate adoption on larger scale in countries like Spain?
Yeah, I think Spain is, like you say, a bad example. I mean, with only 4% battery electric vehicle sales currently, it's far away from anywhere it should be if we want to achieve the targets of decarbonization and reduction of CO2 emissions. And if we want to get to the 2035 zero emission target, then we need to be a lot further advanced. So we're well behind in Spain, but also in other markets as well. And I think there are three key factors that we need to fix to get electrification moving, because there is no alternative. I don't think there's an alternative for the planet, and there's certainly no alternative for this company. There's no plan B for us. We're invested. The Volkswagen Group has invested 10 billion euros together with our partners in Spain in electrification. So for us, there is no plan B. So we have to make it happen. What do we have to do to make it happen? Three things. First of all, telling people that the electric car is part of the future solution. And then take all these discussions and doubts away. Is electrification the future or not? Are there different technologies? All these doubts that are in people's mind, get the doubts out of the people's mind by a clear communication that this is the right way to go. This is going to help the planet. Electric cars are cheaper to run and they use renewable energy and therefore don't produce CO2, and it's the right thing to do. So the first thing, a positive communication around electric cars. Second thing, providing electric cars that democratize electromobility, if you like. The first electric cars to come in the market were bigger, more expensive premium cars. Now we're making a step towards this 25,000, 30,000 euro price bracket, which is the price bracket of the most sold cars in Europe. So you need to have a product that people can afford. Also with a range, an autonomy, a range that's acceptable for the customer, around 400-500 kilometers. Now we're seeing those products arriving in the market. And here at Cupra, we'll be launching the Raval, Volkswagen will be launching its car and Skoda car in this price class to democratize electromobility. Then you need to give the people a reason why, or a reason why not to buy the combustion. I think there needs to be a clear fiscal policy of the governments in Europe to promote electromobility. And that fiscal policy doesn't mean a subvention for electric cars. It means a fiscal policy that incentivizes people to buy the electric, but at the same time, perhaps compensated by a different tariff on the combustion cars. On top of the incentivation, at the end of the day, another big worry for the customers is the charging infrastructure, particularly here in Spain. If you go from Barcelona to Madrid, am I going to get there? Where can I charge? How many charging stations? So the whole governance of the public charging infrastructure, particularly interurban, so between the big cities, that needs to be fixed. Some markets are fixed. So you look at places like Norway or up in North Europe, there's not a question anymore, the infrastructure. But here in Spain, it still is a big question that needs to be fixed. So I think those are the things we need to work on. And we're pushing here from SEAT and Cupra and the Volkswagen Group to work together with the government to improve these things fast, because we're wasting time.
Cupra has introduced new so-called city garage across several European cities. What is the idea behind this concept? And could you share your initial assessment of this strategy and its impact on your overall sales approach?
Yeah, the idea behind the Cupra City Garage was to bring the brand spirit of Cupra to those cities. So to inspire the world from Barcelona, where Cupra comes from, but still respecting the individual city we're in. So one of the first ones we did was in my previous hometown of Munich, but we now have in Sydney, in Mexico City, we have in Milan, we have in Madrid, we have in Paris, we have almost all major European cities covered already. And I'm looking forward to opening Istanbul later this year. Okay. Then beginning of next year, I'll be going to Vienna and back to my hometown of Manchester, which is going to be the best one for me. But I'm really looking forward to going back. And now that Oasis is coming back as well, Oasis is coming back and Wayne's coming back. So I'm coming back to Manchester to open a Cupra City Garage. It's going to be so emotional and so big for me. But coming back to the City Garage, what we want to do, we don't want to do car showrooms. They're not flagship stores. They're not principally there to sell cars. They're there to promote the brand and get people closer to our brand and let people experience what our brand is about in all its facets. Not only, obviously, the products will be there, but the brand is more than just products. We have lots of different collaborations, particularly here in Spain with other organizations in Barcelona, whether that's the Football Club of Barcelona, whether that is Marcet doing great lighting or other companies here. I just had a meeting now with a jewelry company from Barcelona. We're working on Cupra jewelry. So the whole Cupra world is a lot more than just cars. It's a total brand experience. The people who work in these garages as well, the Cupra Masters, live this experience. And we try and link into what's going on into the city. So let them become a platform for the city as well. A lot of it's about music, our involvement with Primavera Sound, one of the biggest music festivals in the world, or certainly in Europe. So we work a lot there, and we have a lot of events and music events and DJs, but also the world of art and graffiti. We work together with TV Boy here in Barcelona on artwork with him, and we show his artwork around. So we're doing a lot of things. There's always something new going on in a Cupra City Garage around the world.
That's really cool. You just mentioned so many interesting things. We just learned a lot about music, culture, and about emotion. I like that you call these guys masters. It's like a bit like Apple call them staff members genius, because they're putting the people on the top. So what role do you believe does Cupra's emphasis on emotional products play in transforming the automotive landscape, especially when comparing traditional combustion engines with electric vehicles? So how much is emotion important?
We think it's our key differentiator looking ahead, particularly in a very rational world. And a lot of the reasons around going to electrification are rational, reducing emissions and so on. But in this rational world, we still want to prove that driving cars can be incredibly emotional. And that the electric era can be as equally exciting as the combustion era that we all know and that I grew up in, with a five-cylinder Formentor, with a Krapovich exhaust. And how do you transfer that into an electric era? And that's what we're working on. But then you need to work on new things, not trying to replicate that with fake sounds or whatever, but to come up with something new as an experience in the car, visual, what you hear, what you see, what you sense. But the emotional aspect, not only in terms of performance and driving, acceleration, the way the car drives, the way the car feels, but at the same time, the way the car looks. And one of the things we wanted to do with the electric cars from day one is to prove that electric cars aren't boring. They can stand out, they can be incredibly emotional and have great design. And I think we've done that successfully with our first two electric cars, the Cupra Born. There's an area in Barcelona, party area in Barcelona called Born. That's where the name came from. And the other car, the Cupra Tavascan, that's named after a town in the Pyrenees in Spain. The Cupra Tavascan that we're just launching at the moment, our second electric car. I think, that proves that electric cars, and particularly crossover SUV electric cars, can look sensational. And our future car, the Cupra Raval, named after another area in the city of Barcelona, near where the Liceo is and the Ramblers, the real core downtown Barcelona area. The Cupra Raval will be our urban electric vehicle for the next generation. We'll drive like a go-kart. We'll be very emotional. It will look fantastic. And that's the car we're looking forward to from 2026 onwards.
So we got our first questions from the audience, Wayne. It's from Marcus Siemens, and he says, "Hola, Wayne. Thanks for sharing. What's your take on the future competitiveness of the European automotive industry in the global industrial progress and power play? What are the biggest levers to pull and the action items here? Greetings from Paris. So he's just at the Paris Motor Show. Greetings back. Yeah.
Well, I'd say hola, Marcus. Thanks for the question. What should Europe do to react to this increased competition? When the going gets tough, the tough get going. So we need to get tougher. And we need to be facing tougher competition from not only China, a lot of people are talking about China, but also from the US, then we have to become more competitive in Europe. And I think putting defensive actions in place or barriers or tariffs may get us, win us some time, but they're not going to fix this competitive imbalance between Europe and the US and China. So I don't think tariffs and the tariffs they just put on the Chinese cars are the way ahead. I think we need a fair playing ground between the global players that we need. But at the same time, if Europe is not as competitive as the US, then we need to get more competitive. How can we do that? I think we have a real opportunity, particularly here in Spain. Here, normally, I mean, today's an example. This is a bad example. The sun's not shining today, but normally outside of my window, when I look out here, the sun shines every day almost. So we have a huge potential on renewable energy. And that renewable energy at a competitive cost could really strengthen the European automotive industry, or particularly the automotive industry here in Spain. So I think we have it in our hands to come up with levers and make our industry as equally competitive as the Chinese or as the Americans. But therefore, we need to work with the legislators, with the government, on coming up with a policy and not just a regulation. The problem in Europe, we have a lot of regulation, a lot of objectives and targets, but not that much pragmatic policy making to help us get there. So instead of just putting targets in and penalties and bans on combustion cars, what you need to do is promote electrification in a positive way with policy, fiscal policy on the incentive side, on the purchasing side, but also on the infrastructure. So that's what I think we need to work on.
In the recent years, Chinese OEMs have gained a significant market share in Europe. How do you view this competitive landscapes, and what strategies should European manufacturers consider in response? What or which advantages does Cupra's intent to do things unconventionally have in this context? So that fits quite well to the question we just had from Marcus.
I think we have some advantages. It's not all doom and gloom. The game's not over. We have so many strengths. As an industry here, we have people, Mattarel, where I am, and I'm here today in the office, is one of the biggest factories in Europe. We have a very productive factory. We have very efficient factories and production facilities. We have very well-trained people. And we have a great capability that I think we've proved with Cupra on creating brands that some of the other newcomers are really struggling with, creating authentic brands. And then at the end of the day, one of our key success factors, as I said initially when we started the conversation, is the fact we have a strong distribution channel, an established distribution channel as manufacturers in Europe. So our dealers and with the after sales service and everything are already well established. So I think we need to use our strengths that we already have today to defend ourselves, but on the same time work on our weaknesses, on the competitive weaknesses, that we correct those together with the governments and government policy.
Let us just briefly focus on the EU, and we just spoke about regulation. Recent EU tariffs on EVs imported from China have repercussions for the European manufacturers, including Cupra, as the new Tavascan being produced in China. How do you assess these regulatory measures, and what solutions might you propose?
Yeah, I think the tariffs that were put on for a different reason. Were put on to protect the European car industry against an onslaught of cheap Chinese products. Unfortunately, that's led to some collateral effects, such as the impact that it's had on our Tavascan. So the Cupra Tavascan is assembled in China. However, the Cupra Tavascan is a Spanish car, a Cupra, developed here, designed here, based on an MEB platform of the Volkswagen concern, Volkswagen technology, built in a Volkswagen-controlled factory in a joint venture in China. So it's not really the car that I think they were trying to address in the legislation. But unfortunately, we've been hit by the tariffs. And we're working together with the Spanish government, but also with the European Commission as well, to try and find a solution. Not only for us, but there are other manufacturers, European manufacturers, that have been hit by this, because this could end up not protecting the European car industry, but in our case could end up damaging us, and damaging us seriously. If we lose the Tavascan, then we lose our ability to comply with the European regulations for next year to fulfill the CO2 requirement, the reduction of CO2. Mm. Therefore, we could potentially have to reduce our production of combustion cars here in Europe, which would have an effect on employment here as well. So a lot of collateral negative effect that I don't think was on the table when they came up with this. So obviously, we're discussing it and trying to find a solution going ahead, because the solution we have at the moment with a 20% tariff that we have on the Tavascan makes the car absolutely unsustainable for us.
Yeah, let's have a little outlook regarding tech advantages and brand evolution. So with the automotive sector increasingly becoming software defined, from assisted driving system to digital cabin applications, Cupra's approach was rather simple. What are Cupra's ambitions in the future in terms of digitization of the cars?
Yeah, our approach was simple, or perhaps focused on the driver. We do cars for drivers, the people who love driving, and that's our proposition. We don't do cars for people to sleep in or for people to do other things in while they're in there. So we're not going to be the car that moves fastest to autonomous driving or to do other things. We see the car as an emotional experience, the driving experience, the design of that car. So that's what we focus on anything that can help make that experience in the car more emotional. Obviously, the driving and all that stuff, but the digital elements, anything that supports the driver and the driving, we focus on. TVs and entertainment and doing other stuff in the car, we're not going to focus on, because that's not part of the driving. So our focus is on the driver and digital assistance systems that support the driving, then the driving, particularly in a sporty way. We have different drive modules for different moods you're in. You can in the Cupra mode, or the now with the Terramar, the off-road mode, and different modes. So those are the type of digital experiences we're working on. And in the future, I think those digital experiences will involve other sensorial aspects as well, such as sound. So linking particularly with the electric cars, what does this sound feel like and sound like in an electric car, in which mood, and those type of ideas, light as well in the car. So not the visual experience. When you get in the Tavascan and you see the way we've lit the Tavascan up inside, I think it's pretty impressive. So we're working on a lot of things.
So we got a question from the audience, from Abby. The question is, hi Wayne, do you think by launching models in the mainstream buyer segment over luxury segment can drive the EV industry forward? Isn't it a chicken egg situation?
I think we need affordable electric cars out there. If we're going to make an impact in volumes on electric cars, what I talked about before, we need to democratize electromobility. So I think we need cars in this price class, 25 to 30,000 euro. With an autonomy, with a range that's acceptable for the customer, so around 500 kilometers. Also urban vehicles, so city cars, smaller electric cars, not just the big electric cars. And those are arriving now. So I think that will generate demand. So the chicken and egg, with the product now being available, it will still need a clear fiscal policy supporting electric cars versus combustion cars. Otherwise, people will not make the jump. So I'm convinced that still needs to happen. And the other thing with the chicken and the egg is the infrastructure. When I talk to the big energy companies and say, we need to get the charging infrastructure up and running and faster, they always say to me, yeah, Wayne, where are the electric cars? 4% of the cars sold in Spain are electric. Why should I go spend all this money investing in charging infrastructure if nobody's going to use it? And then the people who are going to use it say, okay, I'm not going to buy an electric car because I want to wait first for the infrastructure. So there is a chicken and egg on the infrastructure, charging and the volume of cars that we need to fix. And those are the two things that I think we need to work on. But I think we will see now, with not just our cars, the Volkswagen Group here with the urban electric vehicle platform, but also the Chinese competition as well, making electric cars more affordable, smaller cars for the city. We will see a democratization of electric cars.
So we got even more questions on. The questions are popping in, actually. Cupra is a six-year-old brand. So, and we just learned that you have a huge success in that short period of time. Where do you see Cupra in 10 years' time? That's a really, really visionary question, actually, here at the Visionary Club.
No, I see Cupra in 10 years' time as a fully electric brand, doing great emotional cars, continuing to surprise the world with every new car we do, as we did with the Dark Rebel study, on the the sports car that we would have loved to have done, that we perhaps too early for yet. But we want to do very emotional electric cars. We want to be a global brand. We want to be a global brand. So we're looking at going to the US by the end of this decade. So not within the next 10 years, even earlier. We want to be in the US. We want to expand more around the world. I think Cupra's success in Europe, I mean, sold 700,000 cars already and become one of the fastest growing brands, can be replicated around the world. And if we want to make the Cupra brand a really, really strong brand, then it needs to be a global brand. It can't just be a brand strong in Spain and in Germany and some European markets. It needs to be stronger around the world. So we're going global, extending our product range and going fully electric, because the future is fully electric.
So we got another question that links actually to that one. It's from Pietro Garcia. And the question is, do you have plans to launch microcars?
We did work on a plan to launch microcars, and we were quite far down that route. But then we found out it was not financially feasible, and that the cost of this car and the price was not at a level that would give us a profitable business case. So we put that on hold for the moment. That was a Seat topic. It wasn't something we saw for Cupra. Something interesting for the future, but it's so difficult to make small electric cars profitable. Okay. Then to make a micro car as a profitable project at the moment is very, very difficult to come up with a profitable business case. And you need a totally different model. And it's not about sales. It's more subscription or mobility, or selling mobility as a service and not just necessarily the product, and making money with the recharging and the battery. And so it's a different business model, and not our priority at the moment. Our priority at the moment is launching Cupra and moving to electric cars. And with that, we have enough on our plate at the moment.
The time is almost up. So first of all, thank you for your time, and thank you for your enlightening ideas and opinions. And let us, just for the end of this visionary talk, let us have a focus. So what's the main challenges ahead for you? This year was quite successful, but what is the main challenge for the next year? So where can we see Cupra at IA Mobility 2025? So what's going to be the next big thing?
No, a lot of big things. I mean, we're in the launch of our biggest product offensive in our history. Okay, you say your history is not very long. We're only 6 years old. So, but even that, I mean, when I see what we've been up to this year already and launched a new Cupra Formentor, a new Cupra Leon, we've launched a Cupra Tavascan fully electric. We've just launched a Cupra Terramar, and we're getting ready to launch end of 25, beginning 2026, the Cupra Raval. So we have a huge lineup of products in an incredibly small period of time. It's as good as it gets at the moment with Cupra. I don't think we've ever been in such a sweet spot in terms of new product and being able to offer Cupra to a wider audience. So I just think we need to keep this momentum. We have to keep up this positive momentum that we have with the fastest growing brand in Europe. We want it to stay that way. The headwind is getting stronger, and it's not only headwind, it's sidewind and backwind. It could turn into a tornado that we're in. I mean, we're in an incredibly volatile environment. Competitive situation is difficult and challenging. Trying to get the margins on the electric cars with the level of cost is really challenging. Hitting the CO2 targets, balancing your fleet and your sales of cars. So lots of challenges, but at the end of the day, it's never been easy at Cupra. Since we launched the brand from day one in 2018, anything that could go wrong on this planet has gone wrong. There was a semiconductor crisis. We now have different regional conflicts and wars and all sorts going on in the world. That really is a terrible environment to actually be operating in. But what doesn't kill you makes you stronger at the end of the day. So we're used to, at Cupra, facing headwind. So we're used to going through the storm. And we remain optimistic on facing all these challenges that are ahead, that everybody has to face. But we're quite good at being fast and agile and adapting ourselves and always keeping a positive mindset.
Wow. Thank you for these last words. Thank you, Wayne, for your time. Thank you, dear audience, for joining us here today at our IA Mobility Visionary Club Live. We will be back next month, so stay tuned. If you want to rewatch this episode, feel free to follow our LinkedIn channel, or you can also listen to this episode as a podcast. Thank you, Wayne. Thank you, everybody. Have a good day, and thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you.